The Supreme Court hears the arguments. Who will replace Charlie White? Vop Oseley speaks up about his opportunity to become Secretary of State. The statewide smoking ban, Mitch Daniels in Washington, and Jim Wallace quits the race for governor. That plus a possible Rossino takeover and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 2, 2012.
Ice Miller. Proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Democrats made the case to have Vop Oseley, the second leading vote-getter in the 2010 election for Secretary of State, fill the vacancy created when Charlie White was convicted of felonies, including voter fraud. Oseley was among those in the courtroom as attorneys for the Democrats argued before the state Supreme Court that Charlie White was not properly registered to vote in 2010 and therefore was ineligible to be on the ballot. Those attorneys faced tough questioning from both Republicans and Democrats on the Supreme Court, who said they are considering a different set of facts than those presented to the jury in White's criminal case.
He would still be registered to vote, and that would be in the district he seeks to represent. Why would there not be a valid candidacy?
He was not legally registered to vote in the state of Indiana, and indeed was fraudulently and falsely registered.
And why is that?
What will the court decide? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, what's at stake here?
Well, there's more at stake here than just who the next Secretary of State will be. If the Supreme Court would decide that they need to seat Vop Oseley, the Democrat, they would not only be overturning a statewide election, which they've never done before, they would also be taking away the statutory authority of the Recount Commission and probably other state commissions and boards by taking away or reversing a 3-0 decision, bipartisan 3-0 decision, that they made on his eligibility to be a candidate. So there's more at stake than just who it's going to be. There are other parts of this, and that was the main argument the Attorney General was making, and I think I'd be very surprised if they overturned this election.
It's hard to judge what a court's going to do based
right,
on
sure.
questions asked, but right. but there were a lot of questions.
Sure, there were a lot of questions. It's a very big move for them to overturn an elected official. On the other hand, you have a very unique situation here. You've never had a situation, to my knowledge, where you had somebody who defrauded the voters, and you've never had a complete breakdown on the party like you had here. They knew beforehand that he was not legally registered in the place that he filed his candidacy from, and they let him stay
on the
without
ballot. Wading into all of this stuff, the key in the criminal case was where he was registered to vote for the May primary in 2010. The key here is where he was registered to
right.
vote in July when the state convention took place.
Right, exactly. Okay, but still you have the situation where he was not registered to vote from an address that he was living at the time. And you have the Attorney General making the argument here that it's okay to have a fraudulent and invalid registration is okay as long as he's registered. I cannot believe that that's what the law is.
Well, again, the jury was trying to decide whether or not he lived in the district that he represented on the Fishertown Council. And one of the questions that the Supreme Court has is that there's a fail-safe provision that if you can go back and vote where you lived before anybody can. It's a different set of circumstances.
It is. And it's you know, they're hearing a much broader case than what the jury heard that was brought by the special prosecutors. And I think that one of the key elements of this, and again, I have no idea how they're going to rule on this because it is such a complex and novel case. But one of the key issues in my mind, I think, is the timing of the complaint by the Democrat Party. The Democrats knew before the election that this was their case, yet they didn't wait. They waited until after the election to bring it. And I think the court could look at that and say, well, if you knew, why didn't you bring your case immediately? And that may help in the final decision. I don't know.
Actually, I believe it was Justice Sullivan who raised that question during the hearing. And he also made reference to the case in Terre Haute involving the mayor's election in 2007, where the court ruled unanimously that the issues at hand didn't matter because the challenge was brought too late by the Democrats.
I think you're right, and John's right, that the timing in this could be a key. And I'm not suggesting that the members of the state Supreme Court are looking for an out here or some sort of technicality on which they can rule. But I will say it's a real hornet's nest for all the reasons that were outlined here about this is a case that really doesn't have any precedent in Indiana, at least not with these circumstances and with the stakes as high as they are here. So there's a bit of damned if you do, damned if you don't element to the decision. If, in fact, they want to look to the precedent that does exist, including the Terre Haute mayoral case, and for the reasons John articulated, that would give them the ability to say, look, because of when this was brought, it's really a moot point now. And then the other piece of that, of course, is that the notion that voters did know all of this before they had an opportunity to go and vote for Charlie White by a fairly sizable margin.
Voters had a right to rely on the Republican Party's vetting of the candidate as being qualified, and they didn't do it. And the irony of this is, if you have Aunt Millie, who moves out of her house into a different precinct and then tries to vote, they say no. But here you can let somebody fraudulently represent where he lives and elect him to the highest elected official for elections in this state. It is, you know, it would be a reward then that after he's done this and after the party covers up until after the election, you let them appoint the successor.
It wasn't really covered up, though.
They kept him on the ballot. They could have taken him off, and they didn't do it. And the irony of that is,
but they couldn't replace him, right?
They could do it the way they did it in East Chicago and put this on the ballot for November.
I've been saying for weeks I'll be stunned if they overturn a 3-0 bipartisan decision of the Retail Commission that says he was eligible. I'd be very surprised if they do that.
All right. Bob Osley avoided commenting on the case until the eve of the Supreme Court arguments. If this goes his way, Osley will have to give up a seat on the City County Council.
Is it your desire to be Secretary of State?
Yes.
You ran for the City County Council. Why? Did you think this opportunity wouldn't present itself?
Well, at the time, we weren't as far along.
If that comes about, what do you tell the precinct committeemen and the constituents who voted for you for City County Council?
Well, we've already had an opportunity to talk with a lot of them. And I think to a man or to a woman, there's not a single one of them who would ever speak to me again if I didn't take the job of Secretary of State.
What was your reaction when you heard the verdict?
My reaction was, first thing, about what's the impact on his family.
At this point, do you believe that you will become the Secretary of State?
I can only say that I hope so.
And Delaney, did Osley make a mistake running for council?
I don't think so. I mean, it's easily filled in the event that he gets seated as Secretary of State, and it keeps his name alive and shows he's a viable candidate, and he's going to have a lot to contribute to the City Council if he's not the Secretary of State. So I think it's a perfectly rational decision for him to have made.
The governor said this morning that he's made his choice. If it falls to him to appoint a replacement for Charlie White, he has made his choice and he will act quickly. He, of course, won't disclose what that choice is.
Is it you, Mike?
No, it's not me. I can help you there.
Do you know who it is?
I can officially tell you it's not me.
Do you know
who it is? I think I do.
And who would that be?
No, I'm not going to say. If the governor's not going to say, I'm sure not going to say. But I think Vop Osley ran for the City County Council because he never thought that he would be the Secretary of State. I agree with Ann, though. I don't think it's a problem if the court decides otherwise about replacements. That's not a big deal. But I think he ran because he never thought he'd have this job.
How quickly do you think the Supreme Court will rule? Well, by this time next week, will we have a new Secretary of State?
You know, I'll lapse back to what I just said a minute ago. This is an unusual case. We don't really have, we haven't seen these circumstances before. Typically, of course, Jim, we wouldn't see, if this were a let's put, say, normal or routine appellate decision that it was coming down, it could be months. In this case, because of the pressure cooker atmosphere, because a lot of things are waiting on this, you know, you have a lower court decision, you have the recount commission decision all on the line, people want to know, the governor now has said he's made his choice and it's not Mike McDaniel, people are going to want to move forward. So I think it'll probably be, maybe not by this time next week, but certainly in the next couple of weeks, certainly by the end of March, I would guess.
Makes sense to you?
Well, I think another factor that plays into the decision-making process is Chief Justice Shepard's impending retirement. His last day on the bench officially as Chief Justice is Monday. He'll be on through the month of March in an acting position, and I think that this will certainly be decided before he leaves the court. So I think that it will be sooner than later.
I'd be surprised that he took part
If he wasn't going to be a part of the decision, right. He wouldn't have taken part.
During the hearing, Justice Dixon asked for some briefs from the Attorney General, and he wanted them by the next morning. So I think it's going to be soon. It's going to be sooner rather than later. Supporters of a statewide smoking ban won a victory in the state Senate this week. The 29-21 vote means that the smoking bill will now go to a House Senate Conference Committee where key lawmakers will seek a compromise that would pass both houses and win the governor's signature. They are fighting a large number of lawmakers who believe a smoking ban amounts to an unwanted government intrusion into the lives of individuals.
Next, we'll be telling people how many Snicker bars they can buy in a year, how many hamburgers you can buy in a year, how many Cokes, etc.
Wonders are worked in conference committee, and like I said, it's going to take the will of both bodies and the governor's office to get this worked out.
That's author Charlie Brown, preceded by Senator Phil Boots of Crawfordsville. John Katzenberger, has this become an exercise in futility?
No, it hasn't. I mean, the fact that it's moving and has made progress this year versus the previous years is indicative of the fact that this is a very contentious issue. It's an important issue, and it's working its way through the process. It's never, ever, something this big is never going to be a one-year deal. They're 5 or 6 years into it now. I think they're going to come up with some kind of a compromise ultimately, because the Senate now has acted, the House has acted, you've got the key players in one place, and I think you'll find some kind of a compromise at the end.
Well, on one hand, you've got a bill that has passed the Senate, which has never happened before. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it's got exemptions for mental health facilities, for bingo halls, for nursing homes, for bars and taverns. I mean, it's not much of a ban.
There are a lot of exemptions, and that's why I think you see some groups, such as the American Cancer Society, say, you know, we're withdrawing our support. It's basically meaningless and next to nothing in terms of a piece of legislation. But the fact that it did get through the Senate, which it had not done in 5 or 6 the previous years, is significant. It signals, I think, a change in fundamental strategy by backers here, because when you've had proposed exemptions in the past, that in some cases weren't as dramatic as these exceptions exemptions, you had the sponsors, Charlie Brown, for instance, turn their backs and say, "This, we don't even want this." What this tells me is that because it got through both chambers, because you have a governor who has endorsed this and said he'll sign it, the notion now is let's get something in the law, and then we'll come back later and deal with this in a more incremental fashion.
So, but will the governor sign anything? I mean, bring me a smoking ban with all sorts of holes in it, and I'll sign it?
Well, I can't answer that. I don't know whether he'll sign anything.
He wouldn't spell that out to me.
And there's no way to know exactly what they're going to finish up with. But I agree with John. I think there is going to be compromise. I think you're not going to see all of the amendments that were put in the Senate stand. I think some of those will be compromised away. And I agree that this has gone farther than it ever has before. I finally think the legislature is catching up with public opinion on this particular issue. And while we may not get the complete ban that a lot of people are looking for, you will see something pass this session, and I do think the governor will sign something.
But that's the key here, the notion of compromise. The backers of this have said that the bars are really the line in the sand. If you don't have the bars and taverns,
the Senate leadership says we got to have an exemption for bars.
And David Long, you're right.
What is
Senate President Pro Tem said no. So
I mean, what is a bar? Do you self-describe as a bar? I mean, if you serve food within a bar, are you a bar or a restaurant? You know, the irony that this party, that the Republican Party, would stand there and say they're worried about the government intruding on personal decisions when all of them are lining up saying birth control shouldn't be readily available to women
now,
is absolutely
not true.
Incredible
all of them,
to me.
That's just wrong.
Well, your senior
you make this
senator
stuff up.
And your junior
that's
senator.
That's not all of them.
Well,
you
okay,
make
they
these
don't
blanket,
count.
You make these blanket
you don't
statements
count.
That are absolutely
all your candidates,
wrong.
All your candidates
you're wrong,
for president,
Ann.
Michael.
When you say that
all
stuff, you have to think about what you're saying.
With the exception of Ron Paul have endorsed that.
And so that makes all Republicans.
You're both senators.
So that makes all Republicans?
Enough of them. Okay. That's exactly right.
So can we get back to the smoking ban?
There's no role for moderates in your party anyway.
Okay,
so
you go
ahead
and describe.
So the point is, the smoking ban is not just a personal choice.
Well, let's bring this back to the smoking ban debate. I heard one Republican senator this week say that the clean air advocates are winning the smoking debate in public. And that they don't need a government role.
Oh, okay. That's great. That's good. That's a cop-out if I've ever heard it. So don't ask me to make a tough decision, because that's not what I'm there for. I'm there to intrude on personal lives, but that's all I'm there for.
Time
I'm
now.
I'm here to tell you about gays. And I'm telling
time
you
now for viewer know. Feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is a weak statewide smoking ban better than none? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, let local governments deal with it. Last week's question was, do you believe the Girl Scouts are a radicalized organization? 36% said yes, 37% said no, 27% said, can I be neutral and still eat the cookies? Bob Morris was busy this week. To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Mitch Daniels attended the National Governors Conference in Washington, D.C. this week. Daniels also made a number of media appearances while in Washington, speaking out on national topics, including political matters and the economy.
Our chairman has built this meeting around the topic that ought to occupy the central attention of every American officeholder, whatever their place. You know, how are we going to grow this economy? How are we going to build a private sector of America so that we can restore hope and opportunity and pay our bills?
John Schwanis, what does the governor's continuing high profile get him besides attention?
It's a seat at the table. I mean, yes, he said definitively again for the, I don't know how many, umpteenth time.
But now he's saying it on national TV.
Now he's saying it on national TV. But it's not as if he's the one that's, you know, going and banging on people's doors. Yes, he's doing a lot of interviews, but it seems to me that people are coming to him imposing these questions because they do see him, and some factions of the party see him as an alternative, even now after his insistence repeatedly that he's not going to run. So, but it is a seat at the table. We've got a platform, a party platform to deal with. He probably wants to have good.
Okay. In the meantime, there's a governor's race going on here, and Mike Pence is the Republican running to replace him. He can't get out from under Mitch Daniels' shadow, can he?
The governor, the current governor, another reference to the shadow. Well, in this case, he's casting a very long shadow, especially on Mike Pence in that regard, because I think you're exactly right. But I don't know that Governor Daniels can control that. I think that the circumstance on the national level is you know, somewhat beyond
and
him.
And why should he demur? Right?
Well, exactly. Yeah. Why should he demur? And really, he says this over and over again, and I believe him. I'm not part of this. But if this thing strings along, Mike, and it gets right to the end, you might make that motion from the floor, and he might go, you know, stranger things have happened.
There's not going to be a brokered convention. But
you
know, if you're really serious.
You've got to be impressed at how much attention he's getting on a national level.
And if they call him up and he's and they say,
look at the field, okay? Do you want to interview Santorum? Do you want to interview Gingrich? Do you want to? I mean, it's not surprising. The man at least makes sense. I don't agree with him about a lot, but he makes sense and he can make an intelligent comment. You listen to the rest of this group, and Wingnut doesn't begin to cut it. So it's not surprising he gets the interviews. But if he's really concerned about the future of the country, he can't get the Republican nomination. He ought to run as a third-party candidate.
Ann's in a good mood today.
She is. She's just so whacked out with her liberal
I'm whacked out.
You look,
Girl Scouts
you
are so, radical. Birth
you are so out of touch
available
with the people of Indiana. It's unbelievable
how
far out of
touch
you
think the people of Indiana don't think Republicans birth control should be available to women?
Republicans hold every office, Ann.
Okay, and do you
so
think that
you
the,
have none.
Do you think
who
that
you
the
think's
people,
more in touch with people?
Do you think that the women of Indiana think that birth control should
let's give Mike a chance.
Mitch Daniels is going to play a major role in the leadership of the Republican Party.
for as long as he wants to. He's still a very young man. He will have a major role at the convention if he wants to play a major role at the convention, either as one of the major primetime speakers at the convention where he can make his message known to everybody that wants to listen. He still is potentially a candidate for vice president, if not for president, if we end up with a broker convention, even though I agree that I think the chances are slim that we'll end up with a broker convention. So he's going to have a role to play for many years to come. And beyond this particular presidential election, he could be out there for the next presidential election.
Which is what he's shooting for, because he doesn't want vice president on this Titanic.
No, he does not want that.
He does not want vice president.
Let's look at the practical considerations.
Now Ann knows what he wants. So it's amazing.
He doesn't want to lose.
That's amazing.
Speaking, you know how tough it is to get a good hotel at a convention city?
Thank you.
The Indiana delegation is probably saying this is going to get us the 4-star, or maybe 3.5 stars instead of the one on the outside.
You don't have to show you, Mike.
No,
I just want to get a hotel.
We now know for sure that Mike Pence will be unopposed in the GOP primary for governor. Jim Wallace, previously a candidate for governor, officially suspended his campaign this week. In a statement, Wallace indicated that the Election Commission ruling that he was ineligible to be on the ballot due to a lack of required signatures played the major role in his decision. Wallace leaves the race with a new TV commercial still in the can. Mike McDaniel, does that qualify as the worst campaign in recent memory?
No.
Name one worse.
I'm not going to name one worse, because but believe me, they're been worse. But I will say this. The guy covered a lot of ground. He made a lot of trips around the state. Unbelievable amount of miles he spent trying to make his case. But he just started from nothing. I mean, nobody knew who he was when he started.
But he was making TV commercials. He should have been doing what it took to get on the ballot.
That's because the guy's a novice at this stuff, and he didn't go out and seek good advice on how you put this stuff together. I mean, that was evidenced by the way they handled the petition drive. So, you know, I give the guy style points for energy and effort, but he was such a novice that he just didn't know how to go about it. Well, he made what I think was the right decision for him to get out of this.
Duh.
And move on. But when you're spending $1 million of your own money, that for starters is the wrong thing to do if you're trying to build up a statewide campaign.
And he's running as a Republican, and now he gets out and he's making comments. He won't endorse Mike Pence, which is
yet. He didn't say wouldn't. He just said not now.
But
why would he do it that day if he was going to? Don't you save it for another day when you can make a bigger splash out of it?
He didn't do it today either.
Than the day? Well, you don't do the day or the day after.
He suggested that maybe he'd be willing to be John Gregg's running mate as a Democrat.
Well, that'd be an interesting choice, wouldn't it?
What are the chances of that?
Well, you know, you never say never in this process. And I think he made a good impression. I think Mike's right. He didn't have the kind of advice he needed to have to run the campaign, or the kind of legal advice he needed to make certain he got on the ballot. So those two were missing. But having said that, he has a very impressive resume, and he certainly has a deep pocket. As a businessman, and also a West Point graduate. I mean, there are other things in that. And I think he would be an interesting choice
think that a gubernatorial candidate would pick a running mate just because he or she is deep pocket. Oh, wait, that did happen a lot. Never mind.
Joe Andrew reference. We don't get enough of those. this is a bad showing, right?
Well, sure, it's a bad showing. But even Danica Patrick crashed out of 3 races this weekend, and nobody doubts that she's going to have a future in racing. So, you know, Wallace may have an opportunity to capitalize on the investment he's already made.
Jim Wallace, the Danica Patrick of Indiana politics.
Well, you know, you put her on a poll, she might do pretty well.
But he better not.
He
better not turn left.
P-O-L-L.
P-O-L-L.
Thank you. Oh, okay. Thanks for the clarification. Finally, the owners of Hoosier Park may bid on the state's other racino. The owners of the Anderson Racino will be among the top suitors going after the bankrupt Indiana Downs and Indiana Live Casino in Shelbyville. The Shelbyville Racino filed a motion this week that, if approved, would put it up for sale. The purchase price would be about $400 million. Hoosier Park emerged from bankruptcy in October. Ann Delaney, would that make sense?
No. I mean, you've got one in financial trouble, you have one in bankruptcy, and so they merge. I think the only thing that you can be sure of on that is some of the taxpayer money is going to go in to bail that out in some conference committee or other before this session is over.
Even if they were healthy, would it make sense to have one owner or
it
two
could,
central?
It could. They passed a law last session that would allow ownership of both tracks. There are efficiencies that could be made. One of the things we got to think about in Indiana going forward is that once Ohio comes online, and we're going to take a $100 million hit that legislative services are estimating on the Ohio River, riverboats in Indiana, if we don't strengthen our core going forward, we're going to take hits from Illinois, Michigan, and Ohio big time.
So taxpayers should pay for this?
No, they shouldn't pay for it. But if you're going
to
have efficiencies,
if
you're
going to
have efficiencies with somebody owning two tracks and you can make them both viable, then you're ahead of the game.
I don't have a problem with the efficiencies. What I have a problem with is a conference committee deciding that tax incentives ought to go to this operation to make certain.
I don't think you're
going to
see tax incentives go to this operation.
Got to go. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.